The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome, everyone. As I was driving here and seeing the light traffic on the freeway, I thought, wow, probably nobody's going to be here this morning. But on the other hand, it seems like more people are here, maybe because there's not work today. So it's lovely to see you all here. So I thought I'd talk about working with thoughts, in particular thoughts in daily life. A few weeks ago, I talked about exploring the experience of thinking in our meditation practice. And in the guided meditation, I pointed out that often in our meditation practice, thoughts are one of the main things that takes us away from the present moment. And so in our sitting meditation, often we explore letting go of thoughts and seeing if we can reconnect with the experience here and now through body experience, emotional experience, rather than through the content of our thoughts. And I also talked about the possibility of exploring thinking, the thinking process in our meditation. But largely what that means in our meditation is to not so much attend to the content of thought, but more the how we are thinking, which might mean noticing that thoughts are happening as if we're talking to ourselves, or thoughts are happening as if they're images, or perhaps acknowledging a little bit of the content through recognizing that there's a pattern of thought happening, you know, like judging or arguing or remembering or fantasizing. So we maybe make a little bit of a kind of a note of the content. But largely in our sitting meditation, we let go of the content of thinking. So we don't engage with the thoughts themselves, with the, oh, this person said that, and I need to do that, and what am I going to do? And, you know, that might be, oh, planning is happening. What's the experience? How does planning land in the body? Oh, there's tension in the throat, and agitation in the stomach. So we let go of the content in favor of being here in the present moment, mostly through the body, a lot through the body, and some through the emotional side of things. In our daily lives, well, first I'll say one more thing, that it is possible to be mindful while thinking, to be mindful while being aware of the content, and noticing how that content lands or impacts our experience. So we might become aware, for instance, in sitting meditation, that we've had a thought arise about something that happened to us yesterday. And we can be aware of that and also recognize at the same time that there's an emotion that's arising about what happened yesterday. So there is this possibility to be aware of thoughts and the contents of thoughts. Our mind has that capacity. And yet, as I said, it is one of the key ways that we lose contact with the present moment. And so in sitting, we do tend to let go of the content of our thoughts. But it is possible to be aware of the content of our thoughts and aware of the present moment while we are thinking. And fortunately, that's the case because in our daily lives, as we go through our day, we have to think. We have to engage with, you know, like I got up this morning, it's like, okay, breakfast, what am I going to have? Okay, planning to make breakfast. I mean, it doesn't involve a lot of actual content. I mean, it could be that as I'm thinking about making breakfast, I'm also thinking about what else I'd rather have for breakfast and, you know, would really prefer that. And, oh, maybe I should go to the store. And, whew, there goes the mind. There goes the mind right out of the present moment again. And yet, we do have to engage with content, with planning, with remembering, with thinking about what we're going to do, where we're going to go. And so thoughts are necessary. How are we going to respond to what somebody has said to us? So thoughts are necessary in our daily lives. And if we think or have the idea that it's not possible to be mindful while thinking, to be aware of thinking. There's huge chunks of our daily life that seem off limits to mindfulness. And so I'd like to explore, just touch the surface, just explore like the tip of the iceberg around ways to explore being mindful of thinking, the thoughts, how to navigate being aware of thinking in our daily lives, and how to use thoughts skillfully. Thoughts are a key way in which we decide to do what we're going to do. And so if we explore the edge of where thoughts tend to lead us towards what the Buddha sometimes called affliction, when thoughts lead us towards affliction and when thoughts lead us towards more ease and peace, if we can become aware of that divide, we can learn to reinforce and encourage the kinds of thoughts that lead us more towards ease, peace, happiness. And we can learn how to begin to let go of the thoughts that tend to take us more in the direction of confusion, struggle, anger, suffering, hostility, cruelty. The Buddha used this kind of exploration around affliction and non-affliction, or we could say suffering and non-suffering, in his exploration of thoughts. In fact, this whole question of affliction, of suffering, was the whole reason he started his practice and his exploration. He asked the question, is it possible to be free of affliction, to be free of suffering? And the entirety of his teaching is exploring this question and how it is possible to find the way to letting go of the inner processes that tend to reinforce our reactive attitudes of mind, and how it's possible to move more towards the patterns of mind that support ease, peace, happiness. One of the famous sayings of the Buddha is, whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. If you frequently ponder thoughts of ill will, of cruelty, of desire, of greed, that becomes the inclination of the mind. If you frequently ponder thoughts of love, of kindness, of compassion, of wisdom, of balance of mind, that becomes the inclination of the mind. And so the exploration becomes, first of all, recognizing what kinds of thoughts are we having. In his exploration of this, he in one discourse the Buddha gave to his followers, he said, I noticed that thoughts had kind of two categories. They either led to affliction or they didn't lead to affliction. And when he said, when they did lead to affliction, for himself or for others or for both, when these thoughts would arise around greed or cruelty or ill will, he said, I recognized these were not helpful thoughts. And he didn't actually say, and I stopped thinking them. Because, you know, that's not really possible, right? I mean, we know our thoughts are... I mean, we can kind of at times try to repress thoughts, but how successful is that in really having us let go of or release the underlying tension or tightness or confusion or the emotional reactivity that's leading to those thoughts? So one of the explorations that the Buddha made was not to try to suppress the thoughts, but rather to, in his words, to contemplate the drawbacks of those thoughts. To recognize these thoughts lead to struggle, to suffering. These are not helpful thoughts. Now, what this points to, basically is acknowledging or kind of taking you from the place of being caught in the world of the thought, believing it, kind of having the sense that something has to be done about this thought, to the place where you're recognizing, oh, this is a thought, and it's a thought that leads to affliction, either for myself or others, or for both. And so it's like a quarter turn. It's this little turn in the mind to go from believing the thought to recognizing, oh, this is the thought, and it's not a helpful thought. We have that capacity to recognize that. So that's one side of it. The other side is recognizing that there are thoughts that are helpful, thoughts of compassion, of kindness, of generosity, of wisdom. And these do not, what the Buddha reflected there is he said, these do not lead to affliction. I could think these thoughts all day and all night and nobody would come to harm from these thoughts. Those kinds of thoughts, he said, you know, those are the kind of thoughts we can engage with in our daily life. So this is one of the first explorations, is to see, can we recognize which thoughts are helpful and which thoughts are not helpful? And the way I'd like to explore this today, so this is really the whole piece I'm going to look at today. There's so much to talk about with respect to being aware of thoughts and working with thoughts in daily life. But I'll just take this little piece of how do we explore recognizing when they're useful and when they're not useful. And I'd like to go into this through thinking of thoughts. I mean, thoughts can sometimes be considered almost as inner speech. Often we do have the experience of thoughts being as if we're talking to ourselves. And so thinking of thoughts in that way, as if they are inner speech, I'd like to look at what the Buddha suggested about guidelines for speech. In his guidelines for speech, he suggested we avoid false speech, harsh speech, divisive speech, and idle speech. Now, we can consciously, even this is not easy in our daily lives, to notice that something we're about to say is harsh or false or divisive or idle, and refraining from doing that. That's hard enough in and of itself, but it is possible to refrain, to use our sense of knowing that we're going to speak before we speak, and not speak when the language or the what we're going to say is false or harsh or divisive or useless, idle. With our thoughts. Now, this we can think about this as a guideline. When thoughts are false or harsh or divisive or idle, perhaps they're not useful. Perhaps they're not helpful thoughts. And yet we can't then just say, oh, stop thinking those thoughts. And so this is the piece I want to look at. But in any case, we can recognize, okay, these thoughts are not so helpful. And in that movement, again, oh, this is a thought, it's not helpful. What are the drawbacks of thinking a false thought? What are the drawbacks of thinking a harsh thought? Or what are the drawbacks of thinking a divisive thought? The other speech guidelines that the Buddha used is this the appropriate time to say something? Or is this a beneficial thing to say? And so I'd like to kind of wrap all of those reflections around speech into three questions that we can look at in our minds around our thoughts. Are they true? Are they kind? And are they necessary? Those three things kind of meet all of those pieces. So are they true? relating to avoiding false speech? Are they kind? They're not. Are they not harsh, not divisive, and are they beneficial? And are they necessary? Are they useful thoughts? Are they not idle thoughts? And is this an appropriate time to be thinking? Is this thought necessary in this moment? And so these three guidelines we can explore around our thoughts. Are they true? Are they kind? And are they necessary? If they don't pass these criteria, then it's the exploration becomes not to try to suppress the thought, to say, oh, I need to stop thinking that thought. How can I stop thinking that thought? To use a suppression. That suppression will add a flavor of aversion in the mind. So the practice becomes rather, first of all, recognizing that this is a thought that is not helpful, and then recognizing that it is a thought, and perhaps not following through on actions that that thought might tend to prompt. So let's start with truth. Are our thoughts true? Sometimes we don't even question this. We don't even think about whether our thoughts are true or not. It's almost as if because they are our thoughts, they're true. Or we don't even reflect on the possibility that they might not be true. So judging thoughts, for example, you know, self-judging thoughts in particular, you know. Oh, I did that really badly. Or, I'm a failure. Or, you know, just any kind of flavor of judging thoughts. Often these thoughts include assumptions. And what are those assumptions based on? So we can begin to explore what assumptions lie behind our thoughts. Even just questioning, you know, as judgments arise, as ideas arise in our mind, you know, questioning, is this actually a true thought, begins to point out to us that much of what arises in our mind as thoughts are simply beliefs, assumptions, and views. And when those are present, beliefs, assumptions, and views, it's like, okay, well, we can begin to recognize, oh, that's an assumption. Is that assumption true? Well, I don't know, but it's what I've got to operate with right now. So we can recognize that rather than acting out of truth, we are acting from an assumption. And that can tend to mitigate the kind of reactivity or kind of wholehearted engagement with something when we are taking something as truth. It's more like, wow, okay, yeah, I don't know this is actually true. It's an assumption. And it may promote a sense of, well, let me check this assumption. Let me find out. It may not be possible all the time, but let me find out, is this assumption actually true? You know, so we're having a conversation with somebody, and so many different ways our beliefs and assumptions can come into play in a conversation. They say something, they use some language that in our conditioning means a certain thing. You know, they use a term. I at one point, having a conversation with somebody, said, well, I would argue that. And the person got really mad. He said, don't argue with me. And I was like, whoa, you know, that to me, that I would argue that was just a kind of a, here are the things I'm basing this on. So to me, it was kind of a neutral thing. And yet to that person, that the assumption was that I was creating a kind of a conflict, and it's like, wow, that's interesting. So, you know, even language, you know, so checking, what are our assumptions? What are our assumptions? This can happen based on, you know, the body type of somebody. You know, we have history with somebody who has a particular body type, and there can be all kinds of underlying kind of holding. Like perhaps somebody with a particular body type abused us as a child. And we carry with us that a kind of a fear around people with that body type. And so whatever they say kind of lands on us with this kind of, through this lens of fear. So again, you know, just beginning to question, you know, well, is what that person is saying actually something I need to be afraid of? Where does this fear come from? So another piece that's really helpful around reflecting on the truth of our thoughts is that very much largely what's happening is we have a thought and then we believe it or we don't believe it. Mostly we believe our thoughts. But there are times when we recognize that there's a thought coming up and we get kind of confused. It's like, wow, that thought, but I don't even believe that thought, you know. Why is it happening? You know, there's this thought and I don't believe it. And so there's a difference. I'm mostly saying this to point out there's a difference between a thought and believing the thought. And so we can use that knowledge or that understanding to begin to tease apart the thought from the process of believing or kind of solidifying around a thought. I think of the process of believing as being the thing that turns the thought into a reality or turns the thought into what we think of as a truth. It kind of solidifies it or hardens it. So to begin to recognize that there's a thought. The thoughts actually, and this we can really begin, we can see this in our meditation, that we see that thoughts just kind of flit through. They're just such a light thing. But the believing process, I'm doing this because it's like, you know, we circle around the thought, and kind of tell ourselves, yes, that's true, yes, that's true, yes, that's true. And it kind of becomes reality in our minds. And so we can begin to tease apart the thought from the believing. And this is a question we can check into. It's like, okay, here's this thought. How much do I believe it? I'm a failure. How much do I believe that thought? For myself, I believed that thought wholeheartedly for a very long time. And I began to, through this kind of exploration, I began to recognize that sometimes I believed that thought more than others. You know, if I'd gotten a lot of rest at night or was in the midst of a meditation retreat and seeing that thought come up, it's like, wow, there's that thought and I don't even believe it right now. So I began to see that the thought, you're a failure, didn't have to be kind of latched onto with belief. Sometimes the believing actually is something we also can't stop. You know, but acknowledging, oh, this is a thought, you're a failure, and believing is happening right now. Just doing that, just recognizing the distinction between the thought and the belief, and recognizing that believing is happening right now, that like opens the doorway. It's like a little crack in the mind that just takes that on and believes it. There's a difference between knowing that believing is happening and believing it without awareness that believing is happening. When there's the thought and the belief and you don't know that believing is happening, it's truth. I am a failure. When there's the thought and we know, oh, this is a thought and believing is happening, It's just like this tiny little crack to not jump on the bandwagon of that belief. And so, you know, just beginning to explore this question of the truth of our thoughts. Sometimes our thoughts, can be, I mean, thoughts can be kind of, it's hard to say objectively true, but, you know, there's a thought here that I'm sitting in front of the room and I'm offering a Dharma talk right now. Yes, that seems to be a true thought, at least in this context. So we don't have to, we don't have to like dive deeply into, well, do I believe this thought that I'm giving a Dharma talk? And it's like, you know, oh, well, believing, what does this mean? I'm a teacher, and oh, you know, just some thoughts we can just take the, okay, this seems to be true right now, and just go along with it. What I'd like to encourage is, particularly when thoughts get sticky or when thoughts are leading to affliction, when we recognize, like, for instance, you're a failure. That one led to a lot of affliction in my experience. It's like, what is this? What is this thought? How does it happen? What's the belief? So as thoughts become more sticky, maybe thoughts repeatedly visit us, this can be a time to start looking at this question. Oh, is this a true thought? What's going on here? Do I always believe this thought? The next aspect to explore is this thought kind? Sometimes thoughts are neither so much true or false. It's just like, well, as I think of them, as I think of these thoughts, you know, to try to give examples, like, you know, a harsh thought or a divisive thought. A divisive thought is a thought that would tend to separate us and them, you know. Those kind of people do that kind of thing, and my kind of people do this kind of thing, kind of this us and them kind of separation. You know, even that, maybe it doesn't seem like it's true or false, and yet, you know, it's creating categories. It's creating categories of us and them and assigning a judgment, you know, a divisive kind of judgment. You know, they're worse than we are and we're better than they are. You know, these people, you know, they need to know what that person did. Oh, maybe that's a kind of thought that's kind of not in the true-false category. It's like, you know, this person did this thing and that person did that thing and we need to let these people know that they did these things, and kind of with the intention to create division. That's what a divisive thought or a divisive speech would be. The, you know, that perhaps it's true that this person did this thing and this person did that thing, but the motivation behind the thought and the talking about it is to create separation. And the Buddha encouraged us to not have that divisiveness, because that divisiveness is based on separation. It's based on us and them. It's based on kind of a sense of, it comes back to a sense of self and other. And that that self and other kind of perspective has some threads of truth to it, in that, you know, this being here has a kind of set of conditions and thoughts and ideas that, you know, you're sitting out there and you have your own set of conditions and thoughts, and there is a sense that, you know, my thoughts aren't your thoughts and your thoughts aren't my thoughts, so there is a kind of a separation there. And yet the sense of separation gets hardened into I am this kind of person and think these kind of thoughts, and you are this person and you think these kind of thoughts. And again, it's kind of that believing process. And so that sense of self and other solidifies the separation that doesn't have to be or isn't representative of actual truth. This is a huge topic. Let's see if I can say something that will kind of close it up. there is a kind of a process here of thoughts coming up and body sensations coming up, and there is a process here that is not the same as your process there. But what we tend to do with those processes and separating us and them, and me and you, is to kind of solidify this process into a thing. We solidify it into a thing, and it's like, I am this. I am not that. You are that. You are not that. And we put people into boxes. We solidify. And a lot of, I think, the beliefs around self and other come from this kind of solidification of me and you. It's like, I'm this way. You're that way. I have a friend who is often late. And, you know, I began creating this kind of view that she is always late. And then, you know, I began recognizing, well, she's not actually always late. So, you know, when we solidify and create this us and them, we kind of restrict ourselves. We put ourselves into boxes. We think, this is what I am. This is what I'm capable of. And we are, again, in the terrain of belief and not truth. And so when thoughts are divisive, when thoughts are separating like that, I'm like this, you're like that, maybe it's, you know, seems true. I'm always on time, you're always late. Well, actually, maybe not. You know, look again. One Dharma teacher was talking about some of the thoughts she was experiencing around her offspring, her child, who was doing something that she didn't like. And one of the thoughts that came up is, I'm not the kind of mother who has an offspring that does that, a child that does that. And then she thought, well, look again. You know, so again, we reify ourselves. We cement ourselves. So looking at these divisive thoughts, harsh thoughts also, you know, harsh thoughts tend to be thoughts of anger or ill will or cruelty. At one point early in my practice, I noticed for somebody I was angry with, you know, somebody I felt had done me wrong, and was pretty angry with that person, and I began noticing thoughts of harshness and cruelty. It's like I actually wanted that person to suffer. And as I saw that, you know, it actually was like, wow, you know, it was very humbling because I recognized, you know, that movement of wanting somebody to suffer for having harmed me, that right there, multiplied by 7 billion people, is where war comes from. And so it did two things. It kind of made me recognize, wow, this kind of thought is a thought I don't want to follow. You know, that's kind of contemplating the drawbacks in a way, looking at, wow, this kind of thought multiplied by 7 billion, you know, this is, you know, it kind of was mind-blowing to realize that the seeds of war were in here, in this, in me, in this body-mind process, that I was not immune from that kind of movement of mind that wanted somebody to suffer. And, you know, so it was both humbling and it gave me the inspiration to, you know, that way is not the way I want to go. So beginning to recognize that. Now, again, with that kind of thought, you know, recognizing, oh, there's a thought arising in my mind that I want you to suffer. You know, it's not that we can tell ourselves, oh, I'm going to stop thinking that thought right now. I mean, we can recognize, and this is, again, this is the turn that the mindfulness and our practice supports us in, to recognize this is a thought that's happening in the mind. Do I believe it? Is it necessary? To reflect on the drawbacks. And as we do that, it takes the thought from being something that we believe in, something that the mind kind of has congealed and thinks, yes, charge forward with that thought. And it turns it into, wow, this is something that's happening now. It's being believed. It's being, wow, look at this. And actually, as we feel into the experience of wanting somebody else to be to suffer, we actually feel in our own experience that doesn't feel good to want somebody else to suffer. There's a kind of a tightness, a contraction, an ache in the heart. And so we see that those kinds of thoughts too, we feel suffering in our own experience. So contemplating the drawbacks of unkind thoughts can support the conditions for them to begin to release, to begin to subside. And this was what the Buddha said he found in his own practice. As I contemplated the drawbacks of these thoughts, they began to subside. And so this takes our willingness to recognize thoughts are something that's happening, are a phenomenon that's happening now in the present moment. And then we begin to look at those thoughts. Okay, here's a thought arising in the present moment. Is it true? Is it kind? And as we see that with our mindfulness, we begin to have some choice about whether we follow through on those thoughts. Whether the thoughts continue is one thing that we may not have control over, but picking up the thought and going with it, saying, yeah, I need to make sure that person suffers, that's another thing. So can we recognize, oh, these thoughts are not helpful, these thoughts lead to harm or affliction, and having seen that, this only works if we see it. You know, if we don't see it, if we don't see the thought, if we don't see the belief in the thought, we tend to charge with it. If we see it and we recognize, oh, there's the thought and I'm believing it, then we may have a choice to not act out of that thought. Maybe we have that choice. And what I've seen in my own practice is that more, as I do this recognition of, oh, this thought, this not so helpful, as I do this more and refrain from acting on those thoughts, they tend to subside. Not engaging with those thoughts, as the Buddha said, whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. And so if we stop pondering could be that sense of, oh yeah, need to do that, need to think about that, need to fix that, need to change that, better go make sure that person's suffering, better that kind of process, that's pondering, that's reinforcing that pattern in the mind, that unkind pattern in the mind. And as we let go of that, what tends to happen is that their opposites begin to emerge. The kind of the underlying maybe an underlying kind of psychology behind Buddhism is that the afflictive mind states of greed, aversion, confusion are visitors. And as they begin to fall away, what begins to arise are their opposites. Non-greed, connection, generosity, non-aversion, love, kindness, non-confusion, wisdom. And so as the afflictive thoughts begin to dissipate, more of the wholesome thoughts, the kind thoughts, the generous thoughts begin to arise, and then those become more the inclination of the mind. And then the third piece, reflecting on the necessity of our thoughts. I like this one. This one I think is fun to think about. It's one that I think I use a lot. I use this one a lot. So much of our thinking is noise. So much of what kind of rattles around in our mind is just junk. And so, and yet somehow it seems to be like, I don't know, the necessity of thinking about it, we've bought into the necessity of thinking about it. And so again, can we recognize, oh, well, these thoughts maybe aren't necessary. They serve a familiar purpose. Many of our what seem to be idle thoughts, check it out for yourself. How many of these thoughts contain the word I? I am, I need, I have to do, I've got to go. How many of them are self-referential thoughts? Even when we're thinking about other, that person did that, there can be a subtle, I would never do that, underlying or connected to that thought. So many of our, what, you know, rattles around in our mind is, you know, ourselves telling us the story of me. It's kind of amazing just how much we do this. And in fact, this can be revealed a little bit in our meditation practice. On one three-month retreat, I was beginning to see that there was like this layer of thinking. It was like the bigger thoughts, the grosser kind of thoughts fell away, the ones about, oh, I need to do this and have to do that, you know, the kind of planning for, you know, what did I do yesterday and what do I need to do tomorrow? And what I discovered is the past and future thoughts fell away. There was this endless stream of present moment thoughts. And now she's walking into the room, and now she's turning on a light, and now she's just this endless stream of thinking. So much of our thinking is just telling ourselves who we are, what we're capable of, and why we are doing things. Again, now we can't necessarily we can't flip the switch and turn these thoughts off. And yet we can begin to recognize them again if, oh, story of me is happening right now. Sometimes, and again, the story of me is a story that tends to solidify our beliefs. So, you know, these all tie together. All these, you know, true, necessary kind, they kind of tie together because so much of the story of me that we tell ourselves is cementing beliefs about who we are, what we're capable of. We don't actually need these thoughts to live our lives. We're much more flexible than we give ourselves credit for, I think, a lot of the time. So, you know, exploring this level of thought, you know, sometimes, I'm going to go back to the kind of the more obvious kind of thoughts and looking at whether those are necessary or not. Because, you know, sometimes we do get caught in a time where we're thinking something, like, you know, in the middle of the night. You know, how many people wake up in the middle of the night and start thinking about something? Certainly this happens to me. And, you know, that's a moment when I like to use this reflection. Is this necessary to think about right now? Actually, it's not at all helpful to think about this right now. And so, you know, that kind of reflection, is this necessary to think about right now? You know, sometimes in the middle of the night, this is just a trick I use for the middle of the night kind of unnecessary thoughts. It's like, yes, actually, the reason why this thought is kind of so sticky in the middle of the night is because it does need to be thought about. You know, this is where the content can be something that is actually important. You know, it's like my mind was, I'm going to be going away in a couple of weeks for 2 months. And it's like, I've got a lot of things to do before I go away. You know, it's like my mind was kind of spinning around, right? I got to do that. I got to do that. I got to do that. And at some point, it's like, okay, this is not necessary to do this right now. But, you know, so this is my little trick. Yes, acknowledging these thoughts are necessary for me to get things done that I need to get done before I go away for 2 months. And so what I'm going to do is I promise myself that when I get up in the morning, while I'm having breakfast, I'm going to make my list. So it's kind of acknowledging the necessity of the thought, but not the necessity of this moment thinking them. There's a lot of time we spend kind of ruminating over something that's not necessary to ruminate over in this moment, but will be necessary to think about at some point. And so we can use that. You know, is this the time? Is this the moment? This is coming back to what the Buddha said about wise speech. Is this timely? Is this thought a timely thought? Is this appropriate for right now? Perhaps not. And in the acknowledgement, at least for me, as I acknowledge and recognize, this is not necessary right now, and making that appointment with myself and saying, yes, I will do this in the morning. It's like the mind can relax. It's like the mind has then seen, yes, she's figured out this is necessary, guys. Okay, great. She's going to do it. Okay. And then it's like that whole committee of people that are telling me what I need to do. They get quiet and let me go back to sleep. So, you know, this kind of necessary. So sometimes there are necessary thoughts, but they're not timely. For kind of the what we might consider objectively unnecessary thoughts, you know, looking at what purpose it's serving can be an interesting exploration. You know, sometimes we think thoughts because we want to feel good. You know, we move into a fantasy. We move into a fantasy because, you know, well, we're kind of miserable right now. So the mind has a strategy for dealing with miserableness by creating a fantasy. So, you know, if we understand the purpose that's underlying these thoughts, you know, if we find ourselves living in fantasy a lot, it might be helpful to explore, you know, what's the purpose there? Well, this is how the mind has learned to make myself feel better. Maybe there's another way. Maybe there's another approach to feeling better. The pattern around thinking about, oh, you know, oh, I'm gonna, oh yeah, it's really nice to think about being off in that beach somewhere, you know, not having anything to do, you know, that's a really nice thought. In the meantime, having all these things I need to do. You know, so to recognize, oh, this is trying to deal with overwhelm right now. One of the key gifts that our practice gives us is that actually when we stop avoiding our overwhelm, stop avoiding what is difficult in the present moment, and actually land in it, meet it, open to it, sometimes there's another way that's, it's almost like going through it or under it or in it begins to touch into some kind of wisdom that unveils a different way to relate to that experience. And so by avoiding it, by going to the fantasy, by thinking those unnecessary thoughts, we're not allowing a deeper kind of wisdom to develop through opening to meeting the struggles, the suffering. And that's a big topic too. So I didn't leave as much time for comments or questions as I hoped, but are there any thoughts?
So I have a question that comes up. It's something that's been going on for a few weeks, and this talk touches on it. You didn't say much about how emotions get caught up in these thoughts, and I find suddenly this burst of creative energy in the last month or two, which I haven't had for a long time, and it feels great. And so I gotten involved in a lot of projects of making things. And then I'm finding myself driven to do it. And it's becoming physically uncomfortable. So it's really a very mixed bag. I mean, I love the things are good. The things I'm doing are wholesome and good, and they're coming out well. They're bringing me a lot of passion and energy. It feels good sometimes. Too much energy doesn't feel so good. It's hard to balance it. I try to balance it and say, I'll do this. I'll take time out. I'll pay my bills before I do anything else today, and then whatever time left. But it doesn't really work. I'm just driven by the passion, and there's a lot of thinking going on.
Yeah.
A lot of planning. There's how do I put this piece next to that and do this, and then I go ahead and do it, etc.
The thing I'd encourage you to explore is the edge between where does that process of inspiration and creativity turn into needing to do it. You know, where does it become, I mean, because that's the point of the solidification of I need to do this. I mean, it's like this process of creativity is arising and is asking to be expressed in some way. And as you say, there's a wholesomeness to that, you know, and so that's fine, you know, following through on that. But somehow it links back around to the belief in I need to control this, I need to fix this, I need to do this, as opposed to letting the creativity kind of express itself. And so just noticing when it kind of gets tight, gets caught, because I think you're noticing that. You know, there are times when you feel that distinction. So playing with recognizing, and again, it's not like we can just say, stop that, turn that off. But this is a great pointing to this kind of place between you know, when it's wholesome and when it's not wholesome. You know, what you're describing are some wholesome thoughts that can be followed through on, and yet something gets kind of picked up in there that says, that tightens down. It's like, yes, I need to, I have to. What is that linked back to? What is that link? And as you point to, what are the emotions that's linked back to? Is it linked back to some kind of a, you know, fear, or is it linked to some kind of a needing to prove something, or, you know, the process of the creativity can unfold without that extra. And so it's like looking at what's extra in the process. And as you begin to see the extra, again, recognizing the extra as not something to suppress, but something, oh, what is this extra? You know, maybe there's some thoughts in there that you might begin to check out the distinction between the thoughts of kind of the almost spontaneously arising creativity and the thoughts that are, how do I do this? What am I going to do? And kind of the fear around the controlling of the process or the, you know, so just notice the distinction between those two and see what happens. And your body is going to give you feedback too, right? Yeah. And so you'll have to slow down at some point. Yeah, thank you. And we need to stop. So thank you for your attention. Mm-hmm.